Hi, I'm Clemmie Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. Shoes are my absolute weakness. They make or break an outfit. This season's range from M&S is pretty dreamy. There's some great boots and some loafers that I've got my eye on. And if you're a heels wearer, then there's some platforms that would make a great investment too. I'm genuinely thrilled to be partnering with Marks & Spencer's on this podcast. Not only are they supporting this podcast, they're indulging my very real shoe obsession too. Today, I have two wonderful women in the studio. One is a fertility and women's health expert, a registered acupuncturist, a founder of her own clinic, and author. Vogue describes her practice as bridging the gap between Western medicine and the world of complementary therapies. She is Emma Cannon.
Hello.
And she is joined by author, podcaster, mother of two, and ex-pop star, maybe?
I haven't had that one in a little while.
Haven't you?
No.
But the thing is, in order for me to do this, I like deeply stalk people's lives, which I want to come back to. So she is Izzy Judd. Hello, Izzy.
Hi.
So yeah, first of all, I found out about your career in music.
Yeah. When people ask me what I do, you know, I trained as a musician from a really young age and was in an electric string quartet.
Yeah,
so that's kind of where
you weren't
career...
in any old. You're on the telly being in an electric.
Yeah, I was in the telly. On the telly. A long time ago. I can't believe, how long ago it was.
How long ago was it?
So what, would have been 2008?
Oh, yeah. Anyhow, we're not here to talk about classical music, although it is very interesting. We are here to talk honestly, and that is the name of the podcast. And to get everyone in the right headspace, I like to start with a quick fire round. On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
Oh, 10.
Is he frowning?
Oh, God. Oh, I'm going to go right in the middle at 5, I think.
Not confident in your corners. On a scale of 1 to 10, how nice are you?
Oh, too nice sometimes. 8.
7.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how strong are you?
10.
I'm probably a bit stronger than I think I am, so maybe 8?
Yes, give yourself the 8.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Night owl or early bird?
Definitely not a night owl or early bird.
Somewhere in the middle?
Yes.
A forced early bird. Yeah, exactly. No, I've always been an early bird, though. I like mornings.
Dog or cat person?
Dog.
Cat.
Introvert or extrovert?
I'm shyer than I seem.
Often the case.
Extrovert, I think.
I think you'd know if you weren't.
Yeah.
What star sign are you?
Aquarius, proudly.
Yeah, you said that without hesitation. Got two Aquarius kids.
Pisces.
I've just got to say this. I'm a Pisces and I have an inordinate number of Pisces on this podcast.
Really?
And I only ever know until this point. And a lot of Aquarius, but that's not surprising, is it?
Not in this field.
No, not in this field, exactly. Mm. And some people just don't care. I always have, you know, Virgos, you go, I don't believe in that. I'm like, gosh, you don't believe it. When did you last cry?
This morning.
On the tube here.
Oh, God.
And I read something in a book about losing an animal, and I recently lost my cat, so it suddenly hit me.
The new moon is in Cancer. It's very emotional.
Exactly. It's been that all week. When did you last weigh yourself?
I never weigh myself, but I have to. I get weighed at the hospital when I go to hospital.
Yeah. I actually can't remember. I think it was in my pregnancy at a midwife appointment.
So, a while ago.
When
did you last go to the dentist?
I'm overdue, but probably 7 months ago.
Yeah, I'm around this. I'm due a checkup.
Guys, I'd like to tell you that in all the episodes I've recorded, you two have been most recently. So congratulations. You're doing brilliant.
Dental hygiene is very important, everybody.
Winning.
You're doing very good adulting. Have you ever wet yourself as an adult?
Oh, my God. Yes, I'm pretty sure I have.
Yes.
It's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's a safe space.
Yeah.
How did you do in your GCSEs and has it impacted your life?
I didn't do great. My father died in the middle of my GCSEs. I was really rubbish at school and it's impacted my life that I had big mountains to climb and I think it's made me a better person.
There you go.
Wow. I can't even remember how many GCSEs I did. So, but I suppose, you know, working towards something and having that structure and within your life is a skill that you take with you.
Mm-hmm. But you can't.
But in terms of what German I learned, yeah.
Where are you happiest?
With my family in the south of France in our caravan.
Yeah, at home.
What are you most afraid of?
Gosh, I want to say a failure.
Say failure then.
Yeah, failure.
Being alone.
Oh. Mm. Biggest regret?
Not going to get the lump in my breast checked out earlier, many years ago.
On topic of this podcast, mm-hmm. I regret jumping into medical interventions before exploring a holistic approach.
Ooh, that's a good teaser, isn't it, for the upcoming conversation. Three words your friends would use to describe you.
I don't think it's for the podcast, but
yeah.
Brave,
yes,
kind, funny, and a right.
kind, thoughtful, not spontaneous.
I'm laughing. I relate to that. Not very good at rug pulls.
No, exactly.
Really like a system. Anyway, well, that's been fascinating. But anyhow, the reason I have you here is for a big topic and we are going to talk about fertility. You spend lots of your life trying not to get pregnant, obsessively so. It's all you're drummed into. And then when it is time to start, for many, it isn't as blooming easy as you thought, is it? So I remember for me that pain of all the friends I seem to meet who used to manage to get pregnant the first time or people who got pregnant without trying. I mean, who are these people and how does it happen for them? So I guess the easiest way to start is kind of what are your fertility journeys or what has led you to the work that you do now around fertility?
I think what's interesting, you saying that about your friends, and I think we live in such a fast pace of social pressure. And looking back, I actually wonder if I actually asked myself the question about when I was actually ready for motherhood. Was it an expectation that because I had got married, therefore the obvious next step was to have a family? And being somebody that sort of lives, you know, I've always been kind of, I suppose, a good girl and by the book. Mm. And, you know, I've always used control as a way of managing anxieties and difficulties. I think I launched into this, the expectation, not only that I put on myself, that perhaps was also seen around me, you know, and asked of me, when am I going to have a family? And was asked of me more than Harry. Yeah, so I think it's, you know, sort of in hindsight, but certainly we did start trying for a family shortly after we got married and it didn't happen.
And so what were the broad timeframes of that? You were trying?
Well, at the time it felt forever. But as I was just saying in the intro, that I did launch straight away into seeking kind of medical, let's get this sorted. Surely there's something that I can take that's going to fix this problem, because I saw it as a problem rather than actually, it's very normal and very common to not fall pregnant straight away. It was, I think, probably about two and a half years before we conceived Lola.
Yeah, and the thing is, you say 2.5 years, but that's however many, I'm trying to do the maths of the cycles. That's the reality of it, isn't it? That living month by month, cycle by cycle, that's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a lot of other people's baby showers to go to. And a lot of limbo. You know, like there was no, I just felt like someone had just pressed pause and I was totally stuck and everything in my life sort of stopped. And I just very, very quickly lost so much confidence and who I was. And it was, yeah, incredibly, incredibly testing.
And for you, it all begun like straight into married life. Now we forget getting married, even if you've been in a relationship for a long time, is a whole adjustment in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
That people often underestimate. And then you're on this journey, and something that I can definitely relate to with being a planner, you know, people are, oh, we're not really trying. I mean, that is bullshit. The moment you're not even trying is the moment you're trying. I mean, unless you're really, really of a relaxed person, which is pretty hard to do, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, Harry's big thing was that people would often say to him, Izzy needs to relax. Again, it was very much focused around me. And he would always find that a very difficult kind of question to answer, because I'm naturally a worrier. I'm naturally somebody that is anxious. So however much you try to relax, when you are just built a certain way.
But also for anyone, I think that's a hard piece of way to describe anyone, because you try having the thing that you most want, not being able to get it. Everyone's going to make the most cool cat in the world feel stressed.
Yeah. And I think there is a reason. I mean, obviously, Emma, you know, will absolutely know this, but there's a reason why people do conceive in that state when you are more at peace and less stress. And I think there are, through going through sort of talking about fertility, you come across the story lots of times where people, you know, say, we went on holiday or we gave up or we were about to do a round of IVF. But when you're in it, you know, I did that holiday.
In your head, you're going, this is the holiday where we're relaxing.
Yeah, exactly. It's only when you truly let go.
Mm. Yeah, because I watched you be interviewed by Lorraine Kelly, and you said that once you went on the IVF journey, that they were looking after your body and it was very much your job to begin to look after your mind. And I guess that crosses over nicely into Emma and the work that you do.
Yes. Mine is not very interesting, although I have had losses, but I was young and I'm not a planner, and I got pregnant before I got married and it was quite easy. I've had many other challenges.
Yeah. and also you shouldn't feel like in this context, when I was asking my followers about this in the research, and lots of people expressed feeling guilt at being really fertile or being able to get pregnant really quickly. And that isn't what anyone
I think wants. I was just young. Yeah. You know. But my experience with working with couples, I mean, it has changed a lot over the years because I think that the people have changed a lot, and even in the last 5 years, the conversation around it has changed. And I think generationally, every generation is slightly different. I mean, I have to live with the fact that I'm getting older, and the people I see are sort of at the same age all the time. So I'm constantly having to sort of relate and appeal to, you know, somebody that's younger than me. Whereas when I started, my patients were the same age. So that's quite an interesting dynamic, which I actually love. But what's very interesting about this current generation is that they're not really used to failing. Mm. And they see not getting pregnant immediately as a failure. Mm. And so actually the anxiety and the obsession rises very, very quickly. And this is probably one of the biggest things I see in clinic now. That's not to say that there aren't other major factors impacting on our fertility, such as our environment increasingly doesn't support our fertility, and we are getting older, and male factor, hello. Yeah. So there are obviously lots of other factors, and not ovulating is the biggest cause of infertility, actually. So there are proper medical reasons. However, the expectation that it will arrive like Amazon the next day, and people feel like they're failing. And it's visceral. And the longer it goes on, the more obsessive it can get, and for good reason. But it is definitely a generational thing. It is definitely getting worse. And the comparing ourselves to other people is getting worse because of social media.
Because once upon a time, if you didn't have social media, you wouldn't know that someone you went to school with, you haven't seen for 10 years, on their second baby, it wasn't in your immediate thing. But it's so true, isn't it? Life has got faster. You know, we want things the next day. You have an email response quickly.
Yeah.
And so that month time frame suddenly feels, it's like time's expanded a bit, yeah. Isn't it?
I mean, I would never be so glib as to say that's the cause of
no,
all
no, the, you but know, it's an but interesting it's, observation.
It's very, it is an interesting change in people's expectations. And I definitely think it has a bearing because I think actually on one level, if everything is right and the tubes are right and the sperm is there, we're actually designed to conceive when we feel safe. Mm. Our body is flooded with endorphins and dopamine and serotonin. There's a reason for the orgasm because it gives us a flood of all of those brain chemicals. But when we feel that we're in a place of danger, we produce cortisol and adrenaline. And this impacts on our immune system as well, which can be a block to fertility as well.
Quick ad break to let you know about our sponsors M&S and their Per Una range, which I describe as effortless and feminine. Not exactly words I'd use to describe myself, but a girl can dream. Jokes aside, the fabrics and finishing details are gorgeous, pretty and super easy to wear too. So actually, again, when I was researching, a couple of people were saying even just fertility 101 that lots of women aren't even aware when they ovulate, and so that, you know, there's a whole journey in that, isn't it? And getting to know your, I've recorded another episode about periods, but having a good understanding of your cycle to begin with, isn't
it? I mean, that's the first thing that I do. But even with that, it's there's so many nuances with this, because you want to educate women about their cycle, but you also don't want them to become too fixated.
Yeah.
And actually the use of sticks and things like that, we did an audit in the clinic, and we actually found that people that habitually use sticks, they have less sex because they think that they have this enormous control and that actually it's better to have sex throughout the month, really.
Is it?
Which can be exhausting when, you know, you're not having sex for fun anymore and you're having sex to make a baby.
It's arduous.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Yeah.
Those memories just flooding
back.
Yeah,
and again, for you and your like post-honeymoon kind of time.
And just the things that you think, like I remember just not wanting to get out of bed after we'd had sex.
Having your feet up in the air.
Or, yeah, having my feet up in the air. Or just thinking that month it was because I got out of bed. Or, you know, just these silly things that you start to believe.
And that's part of the obsession. It's like, if I do this, this, this and that, I will achieve it. And, you know, I really try not to feed into that mentality with my books. But of course, it's hard to unravel that, really, because you want to give people advice. But what I try and give is really personal advice rather than, oh, do this, 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 and this, because then you have a joyless life and that's no fun either.
No.
I learned huge amounts from Emma. So I wasn't actually treated by Emma during the time, but I downloaded and printed off Fertile, because at the time it wasn't in a book.
That's right.
And I have it in my little pink folder and I've got it all kind of highlighted, the things I used. But I have taken those with me into motherhood.
Yeah.
So looking back now, I know obviously hindsight's always a wonderful thing, but it's amazing on your kind of journey to fertility and learning so much, it's preparing you for a whole lot more. Mm-hmm. And I wish I'd understood that more at the time. For example, the one thing I absolutely loved and actually have a lot to thank Emma for is that I picked up my violin again.
Yes.
Having not played. And, you know, you talk about going back to something you love,
finding yourself
and
again.
Reconnecting. And, you know, I did. I joined some brilliant London amateur orchestras and just played my violin.
And in our rehearsal, your mind is completely on your music.
You're just present in that moment. Yeah. And now the same, you know. I remember I must connect with, you know, part of me, because you become the person that's trying for a baby.
Yeah.
And that's the same within your relationship as well.
Actually, everything you learn on your journey to become parents, you're going to pass on to your children.
Yeah.
We need the vibration of this planet to be lifted. We really do right now. And I honestly look at the patients that I see that go through a lot, and they come out the other side more whole.
But it's the same with all the most difficult parts in your life, isn't it? In all aspects of parenting, but also infertility, you can lose yourself in Dr. Google, can't you? And just desperately again trying to find the answers? Is that a problem that you see, that people come to you with a head full of...
It's amazing who people would take advice from. Yes. I'm constantly amazed who people would take advice from, you know. I think it's okay to get support from non-experts, and that's fantastic, and to be inspired and things like that. But nobody's story is the same. So... honestly, two people could sit, I could see 10 people in a day and would not give them the same advice.
And it's also 2 + 2 = 4, you know, if it did work like that.
Yeah. And it's the only time in a medical situation where there's two people involved. So it's not just one person, it's two people, and it's the combination of the two people together. It's really quite complex. And yeah, no two people are the same. So definitely, just because your friend did it, don't necessarily, whatever consultant they saw, whatever. You have to find the journey that's right for you.
So when you're treating, do you treat people as a couple, or do you treat the women or both?
A bit of both. I love it when people come together, but I would say that probably 60-70% of people I see is women. But I'm seeing more and more men. Really interesting to actually, you know, sometimes what I do is when they get stuck on the journey, even if they've been having IVF and it hasn't worked, I'll get them both to come in and I say, let's just start again and look through everything.
Yeah.
And the other day, actually, we'd had a couple who kept failing at... The embryos wouldn't develop past day 3. So I said, I want you to go back to your clinic and ask for a DNA fragmentation test. And so they went back and the DNA came back as fragmented. But the IVF unit weren't going to do anything about it because they don't have anything to do about it. So I said, I'm going to send you to a urologist, sent her to a urologist. He found a varicocele, which is like a varicose vein. They removed it. He had some acupuncture, looked at his nutrition. 3 months later, night and day. They did an IVF cycle. Perfect. Everything worked. So it's not just about having acupuncture. People come and say to me, oh, I did acupuncture, it didn't work. Or I did meditation and it didn't work. No. It's about giving the right advice at the right time.
Yeah. For you and Harry, was that very much a joint journey, or did you feel the burden of it on you?
I never felt a burden from Harry. And he was very much a solid rock for me. But, you know, he's a little bit younger. His friends weren't married. Mm-hmm. He wasn't in the same headspace, whereas a lot of my friends were getting pregnant. Yeah. Basically, his mentality was, this is going to happen. That was always his, you know, this is going to happen. But when we decided to go with IVF treatment, that's when he... really kind of vocalized that he was worried about that, and kind of we don't need that kind of attitude. Whereas for me, IVF was hope, you know, for the first time it was like, wow. And I really believed I needed some other help. But I think Harry, it was more that he was worried about the impact that it would have on me, and also that it was almost this sense of the last chance. Whereas I never viewed it like that.
So in preparation for these episodes, I always like to ask the good people of Instagram about their experience to try and push it outside of this room. And so these are some of the questions I asked my followers. How long did it take you to conceive? So lots of people, again, coming forward with the first time or without trying. And interestingly, I still feel that pang of kind of envy and jealousy. And then many saying 4 to 6 months, which off mic I was talking to Izzy about, and I felt in my own journeys to having kids that I struggled to find people voicing that kind of middle ground, which is like statistically, actually, that's really, really common, isn't it? But you're either end of the scale. And I think it's important to know there's a whole grey area in the middle.
Yeah, years, completely normal.
Yeah. But yeah, if you never hear that,
yeah,
you, it's there.
And actually, we weren't designed to have children that easy, because we look after our children for a long time and they're relatively helpless for a long time as well.
Aren't they just? Where did you find information? Lots from Google, lots of forums. Thankfully, lots from you, Emma. So that's always reassuring. What were your big challenges through trying to conceive? The fear that it might not be forever, hearing of others getting pregnant, the overwhelming disappointment of getting your period each month. Scheduled sex, that quiet fear that what if my body doesn't work, the dreading the 2 week wait, the lack of control, and the sense of failure. I mean, yeah, we can all relate to all of that heartbreaking stuff. And then I asked them if they had any questions around fertility, the effect of the pill, I mean,
exposes you to more STDs in your lifetime, I think, is probably one of the biggest issues, because presumably then you're not using any other kind of contraception. And so pelvic inflammatory disease, which can lay dormant, chlamydia, which can lay dormant. So it's one of the major things. And also post-pill amenorrhea as well. You know, a lot of women, takes a long time for
them to
get
there. That's what I was going to ask you, yeah. How long did it take to come out of it?
Well, some women, it can be really problematic.
And that, and on a more holistic point of view, if you're on the pill from, you know, quite young, 16, 17, I felt like I didn't really even know myself as a woman without the pill.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the pill has been incredible, and we wouldn't want to say anything against the pill. But from a fertility specialist point of view, most women sit in my clinic and say, I wish I'd know more about it before I took it.
Secondary infertility was a topic that came up probably overwhelmingly when I asked people about it.
Lack of sex.
Exhaustion.
Exactly. I mean, actually, in Chinese medicine, we say, you know, 5 years between children is ideal in terms of your energy and the output. But of course, in modern living, we haven't got 5 years. So
no, because we've started later, probably.
Yeah, I have actually 5 years between my children. But that wasn't me being clever.
That's just the
miscarriage and, you know, that sort of
thing. But it's also, looking at our parent generation, they had kids quite quickly, but they weren't trying to do this juggle. Well, yeah, most of them were stay-at-home mums. And so you're giving yourself over to motherhood. What can friends and family do to help couples, do you think?
I think it's important to have somebody other than your partner to talk to about it, to feel that you can trust somebody and open up, because it then allows them in a little bit. Because I think with my family, I think they felt I just didn't really communicate very well with them about what I was actually going through, and with friends. And so you're not giving them the chance to support you. But it's very difficult, because at the time you're trying to figure it out yourself. Yeah, so then to try and explain that to someone else is quite tough. But I think, you know, as we were saying earlier, to be a listener.
And I actually think modern women have an issue with receiving as well. I think quite often help and support is there, but we're not very good at receiving it. And, you know, absolutely. I mean, I know myself, you know, just like, no, I'm fine, you know, and actually that's my default answer, when actually, you know, I could be drowning, you know, and I'd say I'm fine.
It's a coping strategy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to keep going and keep going and keep going.
I think learning to ask for help is, you know, I think we all need to get better at it.
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah, this way that we live now is kind of crazy, without support.
And then I guess in closing, Emma, I watched your amazing film, Expecting Life, and wept all the way through it. For every part of it, you know, that the joy of getting that positive result and the effect it had on relationships. And also then important to acknowledge the people that don't get the baby in the end, and have really, really powerful line of, just because I can't have children doesn't make me any less of a person.
Oh, gosh, I haven't seen it. I haven't watched it myself for ages, but I've actually got goosebumps about that.
That is it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is that, of course, it's something that so many of us long for, but we are whole people without as well, and trying to remember that.
And my message is fertile. So fertile is rich in resources, fruitful and prolific. And some of the most fertile people I know don't want children, haven't got children.
And that's okay too.
You know, and that's okay.
Yeah, and that there's space for that. And I guess because people say, what happens if there isn't a happily ever after? And I think with life generally, we have to remember that sometimes the happily ever after isn't what we pictured.
Yeah.
But it can be found in other places.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, three things before we finish up. Where can people find you? What are your social media handles, et cetera, et cetera?
It's Emma L. Cannon is my Instagram. Yeah. Otherwise, emmacannon.co.uk is my website.
And I am at Mrs_Izzy Judd. And I have a book called Dare to Dream, which is about my personal journey to motherhood.
That's available now. Do you have anything you'd like to promote particularly?
I've got my programs. I've got Fertile Woman and Fertile Man, and they're online programs, and I can give you a discount code for your listeners.
Oh, that's kind, isn't it? And I always like to ask people, if they could have one honest conversation with someone, who would it be? It could be a troll, a celebrity, a friend, a partner, a younger version of yourself, who would it be and what would you say?
Oh, this is quite deep, but I have thought about this a lot because my eldest brother was involved in a very serious car accident when I was 12. And if there's one person I could sit down with for an evening and talk to, it would be him as he would have been today, yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be my dad because I haven't known him since I was 16. He was a real dude. He was a thought pioneer and he's in so much of my work and what I do.
Yeah, and shapes who you become.
Yeah, and probably more so, ironically, than had he lived.
Yeah.
Because I think I sort of channel him every day. I think he was a truly good person that wanted to leave the world a better place and he found it. And I kind of live by that myself.
I think you definitely do. Two very powerful answers, guys. And also, I always sit here and I'm aware that you guys are really honest and I don't necessarily share that much. So I'll be honest, I don't like surprises. I used to always dream that Ben would suddenly whisk me away on a trip to somewhere amazing and unplanned. But as I get older and know more about myself, I realise actually I would absolutely hate that because I'd be worried he hadn't packed the right stuff and that he hadn't found the right restaurant. So I'm going to put it out there. I don't like surprises. Do you like surprises? Yeah, I know the answer to this.
No, I hate surprises.
Yeah.
In fact, when Harry proposed, he took me away and it was a surprise and I struggled with that.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And yeah, so there you go. We're going to out it. It's okay to be someone who doesn't like surprises. And yes, Ben, you are right. I don't like them. So you can stick to your guns with that one. So I think that's a good place to end. I've been Clemmie Telford and this gorgeous pair has been Emma Cannon and Izzy Judd. And this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe and tell your mates all about it. Thank you very much. Is it possible to look at your body and truly love it? What's life like when you finally move away from diet culture? What role does exercise play in that? And is everyone having more sex than you? And what impact does your own body image have on your relationship and vice versa? These are some of the questions I'll be asking at Honestly Live. My guests, Alex Light, Laura Biceps, Nat Stormy Sunday and Cherry Healy will be joining me to talk self-acceptance to self-love and I hope you will too. Grab a gang of mates, pick up some tickets at gigsandtours.com or via the link in my profile. It's the 10th of November at Bush Hall, Shepherd's Bush. And before I go, one final thank you to the brilliant team at M&S. I'm over the moon to be partnering with them on this season of Honestly. These guys are making it possible to bring these important conversations to life and supporting my mission of truth and transparency, as well as making my very favourite cashmere jumpers on the high street.